So Father Jacob heads off for the land of Haran. And ever since Leah and Rachel were born, people used to say that Laban has two daughters and Isaac has two sons. The oldest son will marry the older daughter and the younger daughter will marry the younger son. So Leah, thinking that she was destined to become one of Esau's wives, used to cry a lot and her eyes were swollen and tender and Rachel was beautiful. And that's how the Torah introduces us to Rachel and to Leah. Yaakov Avinu is welcomed into Laban's house. Well, not really. He says, you're a relative, but you have no money. Why should I welcome you? Why should I have you here? Of course, you can sing for your supper and you can work a little, but not for free. What would you like? And so Laban actually sells his daughter. That's what he does. He sells his daughter and Yaakov says, Rachel, the younger daughter. Yaakov knows that he might try to deceive him and change names of his daughter. So he says, Rachel, your younger daughter. And he takes all kinds of precautions against deception, including making a series of signs, secret signs, that would help Rachel be distinguished from her twin sister, Leah. They're also twins, according to one opinion at least. And this would be work even in the dark, and there would be no question that everything would work out. Yaakov took all the precautions. He made sure all the safeguards were in place. And so, at the end of the 7 years, Yaakov says to Laban, okay, I did my work. Let's move forward. Let's get married. And that's where this morning's class is going to pick up. Let's take a look at chapter 29. Verse 22, Vayasef Laban gathers everybody together, Vayas Mishta. He makes a party. Why did he make a party? He was such a social person, he was such a friendly guy. So the Medrash tells us all kinds of crazy stories about how Laban actually had a coat room and he sold people's coats. This guy was nuts. according to the Balei HaTosfos, his intention was that Yaakov should end up drinking one too many and then not know the difference, which would help Laban to deceive his son-in-law. But that didn't work exactly. And even though he got them together and he got everybody on his side and told everybody what was going on, as the Targum Yerushalmi says it, so, and everybody was in on this. Everybody knew exactly what was going on except for Yaakov himself. Nonetheless, unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to look at it, Laban succeeds. And so it was in the evening. He takes Leah, his daughter. He brings Leah to him. And Yaakov comes to her, which means he consummates the marriage. Why does it say Vayikach es Leah, that he took Leah? So the truth is he knew that in the end Yaakov would marry both. So that's why now he took Leah, and why didn't Rachel say anything? The Tanchum Yashan said she knew that Yaakov had married her in the end, and she couldn't bear the thought of her sister being shamed in public. So Rachel was silent. And the Torah uses double verbiage. It says, Vayihi be'erev vayikach es Leah, vayoveh oisa elav, vayoveh aleah. There's like a lot of vayikach, vayoveh, he took her. So the Or HaChaim says Leah didn't want this. She didn't want to do this. She felt terrible at deceiving Yaakov, but in the end, Laban, her father, compelled her to do this and forced her. And in order to make the deception work right, Vayitin Laban la es Zilpa shivchase lelea bita shivcha. He made sure that Zilpa, who was the smaller of the maidservants in the home, who was actually kind of a half-sister of Leah's from a concubine, that she would go together with Leah, and it would look, the optics would be that if Zilpah was coming along, that this would be for Rachel, not for Leah. What happens? And so all of a sudden it's morning. I married Rachel, Yaakov says, but in the morning it's Leah. And he says to Laban, what did you do to me? I worked for Rachel. Why did you deceive me? Let's take a look in Rashi. And then suddenly it was morning and it was Leah. Well, what do you mean? Who is it at night? Was it not Leah? So Rashi says, Ava Balaila Lehoisa Leah. In the evening it wasn't Leah. How is that possible? Lefisha Maser, Yankev, Simanim L'Rachel. Because Yaakov gave over a whole slew of sophisticated signs to Rachel. And the agreement was that in case Lavan pulls any shenanigans, that whoever it is going to be put instead of Rachel, whether it's a Rachel from the marketplace, or whether it's Leah, they won't know the signs. And because they won't know the signs, they won't be able to get past us as Yaakov's firewall. However, what happened was, when Rachel saw that the wedding gown ordered was being put on her sister, and she realized that this is not going to be the way they expected it, or maybe it is exactly what they expected, this is what they feared, Amra, she said, now my sister will be terribly embarrassed. Amda, she on her own volition decided, so she gave over those signs to Leah. And that's the meaning, the reason why it says, Vayihine Vabaiker, in the morning, and suddenly it was the concept of Leah. Now, it's interesting to note that the word Vayihi is Lashon Tsar. It always indicates a sense of discomfort. And we know that because the Megillah begins with Vayihi Bimei Achashverosh. The days of Achashverosh are no happy days for the Jewish people. Achashverosh was no great friend of ours, and in fact, he intended to harm us. So when it says the word Vayihi, it's not a what we call a Lashon Simcha. It's not a syntax of joy. This is the morning after a wedding. Everything should be so happy. Well, it wasn't, because Yaakov felt terrible for what had unfolded here, and the fact that Rachel was not the bride. V'hinei Leah. So the Gemara in Maseches Megillah says the following. And until now, v'chi ad hashto lav Leah. Until now it wasn't Leah. What if v'hi Leah? So the Gemara in Megillah says, mitoich simanim shemasa Yaakov l'Rachel. Because of the signs that Yaakov gave Rachel, umesarton leleah, and she gave them to Leah, lahayimaker ba'ad habeker. She didn't notice. He didn't notice. He was unaware until the morning. So the Chizkuni and the Becher Shar both ask a question. Okay, he didn't know the signs, but he should have known her voice. How come he wasn't able to tell? So there's two possibilities here. First of all, it seems that we have a tradition there with twins, and if they were twins, so they could have been identical twins. The telltale marks were the eyes, or the tender eyes, and because the telltale marks were the tender eyes, so it could be that Leah's tender eyes weren't seen at night. They could have been a similar slender build, and they could have even sounded the same. But the Chizkuni and Becher Shar both say that out of modesty, there wasn't a lot of pillow talk. So really, Yaakov wasn't sure, and he may have had his doubts, but he's got the signs. So we had a firewall. It had to be the right one. But in the morning, it wasn't. And so he comes to Lavan and he says, why did you lie to me? Why did you trick me? Now you'll notice he uses a redundant language. Yaakov Avinu says, Mazeisa Sisali, what did you do to me? V'lama rimisani, and why did you lie to me? So the Orach Chaim explains it like this. He says, the very fact that you gave Leah instead of Rachel was... That was, he said, Mazay Sasisa, what did you do? And the second thing was that he did this with trickery. If for whatever reason that's the way it had to be, then why weren't you direct with me? Why did you tell me, yes, sure, you'll get Rachel, and then in the end there wasn't Rachel? Why did you do it that way? And Yaakov really here was not only angry for himself, he was angry for Rachel. He says he was angry for Leah. He says, everybody's uncomfortable. How could you do this to people? How could you lie and create such a deception? You rob people of their dignity. What did you do here?
Why wasn't he upset at Rachel?
He was upset at Rachel. But, you know, Rachel said, what was I supposed to do? What was I supposed to embarrass my sister? We'll see in a moment. This does play into the whole business, the fact that Rachel agreed to this. But Yoimer Lavan came along and said, yeah, sorry, man, what are you going to do? This is not the way we do it over here. Over here, we don't give the younger daughter before the older daughter. This is a very, very proper society. He would do everything according to the book, you know? So, did I have a choice? And you didn't want Leah, and I don't have a shidduch for Leah, so I had no choice. So, this is the way I had to do it. Now, of course, this is a very weak excuse, but that's what Lavan said. And so he says, no worries, Ma'alei Shavuazais, finish off this 7 years, because apparently Yaakov hadn't even finished this 7 years. Lavan was a big hero, gave it to him before the 7 years were finished. And then you can have the next daughter, because you worked for me another 7 years. So So here he goes. Lavan not only deceitfully pawned off now both of his daughters, but he even got Yaakov to work for an additional week. Now, according to some opinions, Male Shavua Zeis means complete this week of Sheva Brachas. In other words, he couldn't, the 7 years was finished, according to some opinions, but there had to be 7 days of celebration. So let these 7 days of celebration conclude, because Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha, we don't mix one joy with another. And then when these 7 days of celebration, we finish the celebration of Leah, then we'll move on to the new marriage and celebration of Rachel. And that's what happened. Yaakov marries two sisters. And this is a source of tremendous discussion amongst the writings of our sages and the commentaries. How could Yaakov have married two sisters? And you're going to say, what's the issue? Why not? Why not? Well, why not? Because we know that this is prohibited by virtue of the Torah's law. And we have a tradition that the Avos fulfilled the entire Torah ad shaloi nitna, that the patriarchs fulfilled the entire Torah before the Torah was given. And because that was the case, if the Torah says ve'isha elachota lo tikach, that one is not allowed to marry a woman and her sister, when they're both alive, that is, so then how is it possible for Yaakov to have done this? This is open prohibition, Leviticus 18, verse 18, Parshas Achrimais. How did Yaakov violate this? Now, it is true, we do have to make a little disclaimer here, that Ramban says in last week's Torah portion, and Parshas told us, that even though the patriarchs kept the entire Torah, that was only when they lived in the land of Eretz Yisrael. And since Yaakov was not in the land of Eretz Yisrael, since he was in the land of Charan, so therefore, the fact that he married Rachel and Leah wasn't an issue. I mean, it's a teretz, it's an answer. It doesn't work for Rashi, though, because Rashi says earlier, or pardon me, later, in next week's parsha, when Yaakov is coming back to the land of Eretz Yisrael, he sends a message to Esav. And the message is, Im Lavan Garti, I lived with Lavan, and the euphemism or the play on the word Garti is that it has the numeric equivalent of 613 or Taryag, the Taryag mitzvah Shamarti, which means I did keep all the mitzvahs. So Yaakov Avinu clearly was saying he kept the mitzvahs. And Rashi quotes this in Pshuto Shel Mikra, in the simple, straightforward interpretation to explain why the word Garti is used. Garti is an odd word. He gives a number of explanations. None of them fully satisfy us. And therefore, this idea of Loina Esesesia did not become a sar v'choshev, a very important person, but rather I remained what's called a gera, stranger. But that's not enough. He himself says that we also are compelled to suggest that there is a subtext. There's a pun intended. That Garti also means not only that I lived, but Taryag Mitzvah Shamarti. So from Rashi's Pshuto Shel Mikra perspective, you cannot say that Yaakov only kept the mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael when clearly he said otherwise. So how do we work this out? The Gurarie, the Maharal of Prague, in his commentary on Rashi explains, that we're in the Biurim book, by the way, page Samach Daled. Zehoyal pi ruach ha-kedesh. There was the Holy Spirit. Yaakov got a message, a subliminal message from a higher place that this was the right thing to do. Okay, you get messages. You got to read your text messages. If God sends you a message, this is the way it should be. So that's the way it should be. The Rebbe says, Kosha leimer came b'pshuta shel mikra. That's hard to suggest in the straightforward interpretation of the verse. Shahare leidim tzino b'shumokim shayikiv nitzdav alkach. We don't find any allusion to such a command. We do hear later on that Yaakov gets a command that he should go home. And he comes and tells Rachel and Leah, and he says, I got this command. I think I need to go. Doesn't say here he gets any command. Adarabba, on the contrary. Mi pashta saksuvim. If you read these verses straightforwardly, mashma, it seems, shen yankev atzma yehusha ratza losis is Rachel. It seems that Yaakov himself was prepared and willing and ready and desirous of marrying Rachel. V'lechein asa isegam la'achar shirim isa. Even after Lavan had gone ahead and tricked him, nonetheless, and he gave him Leah, Yaakov himself chose to marry Rachel. So the Maral's teretz, a beautiful teretz, but in a level of Pshuto Shel Mikra, it's very hard to square it with the way the verses are presented to us, and especially the fact that there's this glaring omission of any mention, of any allusion to it, is in and of itself a compelling reality. It makes it difficult to suggest that this is in fact the answer, and that's the reason Yaakov did what he did. Okay, so what is the answer? I should tell you that there are many different answers. But here is the answer that the Rebbe gave us. So the Rebbe actually suggested two different approaches to this answer, both of which fit very, very snugly within the framework of what we call Pshuto Shel Mikra. Answer number one. Ha'avos kiyumu es kol ha-mitzvos kodem matan Torah. The patriarchs did indeed elect to choose or elected to keep all the mitzvahs before Matan Torah. That was what they elected to do. That was what their choice was. It doesn't say ha'avos mechuyavim hayu. It doesn't say the avos were compelled or obligated. It says they elected to do. Some people still think they're before Matan Torah. They think that mitzvahs are electives. Mm. I can choose to do mitzvahs. Well, yeah, of course you can choose to do mitzvahs because Hashem gives you freedom of choice. But mitzvahs are not electives. It's not like you pick and choose. I mean, of course you technically can, but no, you may not pick and choose. God doesn't say, oh, you don't want to keep Shabbos? Why don't you just say so? Then don't keep it. That's fine. I don't mind. I mean, you'll be losing certain blessings, certain wonderful things in your life, but you don't have to. You don't have to do anything. Well, that's not true. Matan Torah means you do have to do. God says when he gives us the Torah, you are obligated. You were avadim lepara. You were indentured to the Pharaoh. And now you're avadai. Now we're indentured to God. And if you're a servant, you're indentured. You don't have options. This is not a pick and choose thing with I could elect to or not. You're obligated to. Torah mitzvahs is an obligation for us after Matan Torah. But prior to Matan Torah, when the patriarchs and matriarchs kept the mitzvahs, that wasn't something they were compelled or obligated to do. That was something that they chose to do. This is what we would call, in today's verbiage, in today's Yiddishkeit language, a chumrah, a stringency. We could call this a hiddur. We could call this a meticulous and beautiful way, going the extra mile. There are parts of Yiddishkeit today that are elective. You say, what? Yiddishkeit's elective. Yiddishkeit's obligatory. Well, fulfilling the halacha is obligatory. You're not obligated to wear the nicest pair of tefillin. You're not obligated to use the nicest Shabbos candlesticks. These are things we can choose to do. We can choose to do a mitzvah beautifully. We can choose to do a mitzvah luxuriously. Or we can choose to just get by with the bare minimum. That's a choice we make. So for the avos, the fulfillment of mitzvahs altogether was a choice they made. It was their chumrah, their personal stringency. And because that's the case, it's understood that when you have a personal stringency, it does not give you the opportunity or the right to override an obligation. What does that have to do with the subject at hand? How does that explain Yaakov's marrying two wives? The Rebbe says, very simple. Yankev hiftiach l'Rachel sheyisa eisel isha. Yaakov made a promise. His promise was to Rachel. He said, I will marry you. That was a commitment. Not only he made a commitment, I will, something. It's something I would like to do. Nasan la simanim b'kesher l'kach. He set up a whole firewall of protection because he expected deception and trickery on Lavan's behalf. And because he knew Lavan was a cutthroat and dishonest to the core, he made sure that he would be able to keep his commitment to Rachel Imenu. V'lachein, therefore, if Yaakov makes a commitment, he gives his word, and now he backs down and says, well, I promised, but it's not my fault. I didn't know what was happening. I didn't expect to end up marrying Leah. So he backs away from his promise to marry Rachel because of a stringency. Namely, the future prohibition that the Jewish people would have of marrying two sisters when they're alive at the same time. Then he would violate the prohibition of deceit, lying, cheating, being dishonest, not fulfilling your word. You say, well, what kind of mitzvah is that? It is a mitzvah. In fact, it's one of the mitzvahs which is obligatory on all of humanity, who is called Bnei Noach. Kefisha Mitzino, we find that even Lavan Arami has to come up with an excuse. Yaakov says, Ma'asisa, what did you do? Lama Rimisani, why did you lie to me? Why did you trick me? And what does Lavan say? Why not? That's what we do. We lie around here. We deceive and trick. Lavan doesn't say that. Lavan gives this elaborate excuse. Well, you know, we have this custom here, and we're very loyal to our customs. And the custom is that the elder daughter never gets married before the younger daughter. And I had no choice. I had nobody else to marry the younger, older daughter to. No suitors came forward. And then you seem willing to join the family. Nobody else wants me as a father-in-law. So I had to... He gives an excuse. Why do you have an excuse? Why did Lavan just say, I understand your question. What is the issue? Why did I lie to you? My name is Lavan. That's why I lied to you. He doesn't do that. Why? Because people didn't do that. That was understood, that this was the code that people live by. People live by a code of honesty and integrity. Yes, they were criminals, but they also had to create a smokescreen, a reason, some kind of obfuscation as to why they didn't keep the law. And which law is this? Ultimately, this is the law of Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Nech. They have one of the mitzvahs is called Dinim. Dinim means to live lawfully. That was part of the law. So what's Yaakov Avinu going to say? So I know I made a promise to you, and therefore I'm lawfully bound by this commitment that I made, but you know what? I didn't expect these circumstances. I never expected to be married to Leah. It's your sister, and since I'm married to her, I'm very religious, you know. I'm very, very frum. I'm so frum. I'm too frum for myself even. But anyway, like this, I do all these chumras, I have all these stringencies. Now I have this commitment, but sorry. My chumra is going to override the stringency. That doesn't work. You have no right to do that. Therefore, Nelatz Yankiv L'Kayim Esef Techasa. Yankiv had no choice. He was legally bound to fulfill his commitment to Leah, even though it was Rachel, even though it was Leah's sister. And that was Shalayav Lava. He shouldn't violate Isser Sheker B'Hafara B'Haftacha by abrogating the commitment that he made. You see, it says Tayag Mitzvah Shamarti. It doesn't say Tayag Mitzvah Asisi. I lived within the frame of the 613 mitzvahs, which means I did things in accordance with the direction, instruction, and ideals of Torah. The ideal of Torah is that I cannot override a commitment by virtue of a personal stringency. So Yaakov said, I am a Torah Jew. He said to Esav, I know you're not a Torah Jew, but I want you to know I didn't forget who I am. I lived in a strange place. I was surrounded by all kinds of toxic spiritual influences. I never forgot who I was. Taryag mitzvah shamarti. And Esav would say, ha, taryag mitzvah shamarta. What do you think, I'm a fool? I know what it says in Parshas Achrim Vayis. I know that in Leviticus 18:18 it says that you're not allowed to marry two sisters, and you marry two sisters. What would Yaakov answer? He would say, hey, Esav, I didn't say I did all the mitzvahs. I kept them. I live within the framework of them. I had a situation in my hand. So what do I do here? I made a commitment, and here I have a stringency. Stringencies can override legal commitments. End of story. The Rebbe says this actually teaches us a beautiful lesson in our life after Matan Torah, namely, Alela Adam Lahachmir Alatzmi. A person should not suddenly be stringent, Velinig Behidurim, and say, well, my custom is that I have all these beautiful ways of doing mitzvahs, I go the extra mile. Yeah, but when you're not obligated halachically, and when you're actually violating a halacha, and worse than that, you're harming somebody else because of your stringency. Well, maybe your stringency isn't so stringent. And maybe it isn't so beautiful. The right thing to do would be to back down and do what's appropriate, not hurt somebody, even if it means making a sacrifice on your personal stringency or on the extra mile you like to travel. A secondary explanation here is that it says, V'isha alachaysa leksikach litzer. You shouldn't marry two sisters because then you pit one sister against the other. And that's considered to be a terrible thing. You're going to literally take two siblings, two sisters who loved each other. Most sisters are close and care for each other. And you're going to create enmity and competition amongst them. That's a terrible thing. And you're literally uprooting the natural love that would be there by virtue of their birth. The fact that they were organically loved each other and cared for each other, you took that away. And that's why the prohibition is, Dafke b'chaye achayis reshayna. If, God forbid, a woman dies, it is not prohibited for a man to marry her sister. And there are many, many famous and great Jews who did this. It's not so common. Ariel Sharon was married to his wife's younger sister when she tragically passed away. There are many other people like that. So the point is, it's not as if once you marry a woman, you can never marry her sister. It said you should never pit sisters against each other. Yaakov Avinu, who's not obligated in the mitzvahs, but is living by the spirit of the mitzvah, says, one second, who made this decision? Who was, in the end, singularly responsible for this spectacular debacle? No, Lavan was not. In the end, no, Lavan was not responsible. Who was responsible? Rachel. Yaakov created a safety net. He put up a firewall. Who took it down? Rachel did. So Yaakov even said, look, if you're okay with this, I guess I'm okay with it too. She made this decision. Rachel never turned it back on Yaakov. Rachel just said, I guess we're going to have to include Leah too. I can't leave my sister out in the cold. So in that case, Yaakov Avinu said, I'm not obligated to do these mitzvahs. I want to do these mitzvahs. I'll live by the spirit of the mitzvahs. The spirit of the mitzvahs, don't pit one sister against the other. I'm not pitting your sister against you. You made this choice. And so in that case, we see that Yaakov does not violate the mitzvahs in as much as he may not exactly fulfill them in their most technical iteration. Incidentally, this does not give us the right to decide which mitzvah we can abrogate because we decide that the spirit of the mitzvah is otherwise. Remember, this is all before Matan Torah, where Yaakov Avinu does this as an added stringency rather than something which is an obligation. And now another tiny little part of the Torah makes a lot more sense to us.